Now, you may think that the recent spells of heavy rain have dampened down pollen levels, but I'm afraid for those of you with hay fever, the word is that pollen levels are still very high at the moment. And you know that if you've been sneezing, the runny nose, the itchy eyes, all of that thing, all of those symptoms of hay fever. We're sort of in the middle of hay fever season, so we said we'd invite Professor Marcus Butler in, who's a consultant respiratory physician from down the road in St Vincent's Hospital, and he's on the board of the Asthma Society of Ireland, and he's here to answer all your questions on hay fever. How are you doing, Marcus?
Very well, thanks very much for having us, thank you.
Yeah. So the season is longer than I thought. It starts when?
Yeah, so this condition of those symptoms you've described, the itch, the sneezing, all kicks off for many people as early as the end of January because of the first tree pollens that appear. And that overlaps then into the end of March, April to the start of the grass pollen season, which gets underway in earnest at the end of April into May. And that eventually starts to peter off to be replaced by the weed season. For Ireland, it's called nettle and dockleaf plantain. And that fizzles out then by September time, more or less. So it's quite a long season.
So October, November, December are the only 3 months, really.
Where the airborne allergens outdoors are less so. But most people actually with the symptoms of hay fever have indoor allergy problems as well, with house dust mite at the top of the list. So it's actually an all-year phenomenon. It just gets worse when there's pollen.
And if you're allergic to tree pollen, for example, does it mean you're going to be allergic to grass pollen and weed pollen as well?
Not necessarily, but you'd be at a higher risk that you will be compared to somebody who doesn't have any allergies at all.
Okay. So what's going on?
Well, the pollen season is getting worse.
Yes.
I mean, there's evidence.
When I say what's going on, I mean, what are the mechanics of hay fever?
So hay fever is essentially a swelling reaction that happens in the lining of the nostrils. And it's because tiny little microscopic particles that wouldn't bother non-allergic people set off this chain of events that results in the symptoms that hay fever patients know too well. So the sneezing, itching, runny nose, and it can get complications as bad as blockages in the nose into the sinuses, and even the development of polyps that block the nose and take away smell. So it has a whole spectrum of things.
Yeah, so it can go from just a nuisance
to
a medical condition.
To quite significant, yes. Yeah. And it's also, unfortunately, associated with asthma. About 60 to 80% of patients with asthma have hay fever, and pollen can aggravate their hay fever and set off their asthma.
Okay. I remember a friend of mine describing how she wanted to take her eyes out and wash them.
Very vivid description.
Yes.
Because very often in hay fever, there's also the lining of the eyeball, the conjunctiva, as we call it, that gets inflamed, and we call that conjunctivitis. And essentially, it's just itchy, runny eyes. You can start to have tearing and look a bit red when you look in the mirror.
Okay.
So that's a very common symptom also.
So I was saying that across their lifetime, nearly a million Irish people will experience
hay
fever.
Probably more.
Probably more.
Yeah, I think it's about one in four people.
In
studies across Europe, it's up to 30%. Of the population. So it's a staggering number of people that have this in their life.
Right, so who gets it and who doesn't get it?
So there are risk factors for this, and certainly the strongest risk factor is having maybe a parent who has it. So genetics certainly plays a role, but it's by no means the only reason. It seems to be slightly more common in the firstborn. It's slightly more common in people born in allergy season. It's a little bit more...
The firstborn?
Yeah, they're just...
Why would that
be? Studies, quite possibly because they're being so protected and clean.
Yes.
But when you throw another child or two into the mix,
the
hygiene hypothesis comes into play, which has evidence both for and against it, but it hasn't gone away as a hypothesis because we keep discovering some strands of evidence that would support the way that we've altered our life into a much cleaner state over the last century or so. But the rates of hay fever are still rising, and climate change is probably playing a role in that too. It's the heat.
The firstborn... Pollen season, if you're born in the pollen season.
Yeah.
Anything else? Factors?
Having a family history
is
certainly
a
risk for it. If you're exposed to antibiotics very young in life, that's another risk factor for it. Or if you actually have positive tests.
And of course,
for
as a firstborn, you're probably more likely to be exposed to antibiotics early in life because your parents are fussing over you.
Could absolutely be
potentially.
So all of those, and it's imperfectly understood because we, at this point in time, we cannot cure this condition, meaning banish it permanently without any intervention being needed. But we can greatly improve the level of intrusion into one's life with it.
Okay. Well, what we do first, prevention or cure? We do prevention then first. What can people do to lessen the symptoms of hay fever?
Well, if hay fever season is coming and you know that you're plagued by it, it's sensible to have the protective medication up front. So the entry level would be antihistamine medication that you can get off and over the counter. We recommend the newer generation antihistamines that are less sedating than the original ones that I would have grown up with. So, for example, Claritin and Telfast are really really good at not having sedation effects. And an intranasal steroid is really good where patients get blockage sensation or bunged up nose or sort of snotty nose, rather than just itching and sneezing. Antihistamines are good for the itching and sneezing, but they don't do a great job once a lot of thick secretions take over.
Okay.
And that's where a nasal steroid does a far better job. So that would be the entry level.
And avoidance is impossible, really, is it?
Avoidance is kind of impossible. At the same time, it is very important, if you get significant allergy symptoms, to pay attention to things like the pollen count. The Asthma Society, in conjunction with ALK and Eamon Arini, for whom we're very grateful for their sponsorship, has launched a pollen tracker today. It uses the same data the Med Éireann office uses that comes from the University of Worcester. And it just helps us know if there's a bad pollen day out. And in that situation, it's probably wise not to do intense exercise in the middle of the day or later in the day. If you are somebody who's big into exercise, try and do it very first thing in the morning before the pollen levels rise. It's also a good idea to have a shower before you go to bed, rather than just showering in the morning, getting covered in pollen and taking that into the bedroom.
And leave your clothes outside, I suppose, the bedroom. You know, if you've been out in the garden.
Ideally, yes. Yeah, yes. And then, which is also the other issue of try not to dry your clothes on the line if you're really affected by pollen, because you just bring that in with you. So little tips like that are available on the asthma.ie website. Okay. You can study those.
So there's sort of medical prevention, I suppose, in the antihistamine, and then treatment of the symptoms then.
So the antihistamine is also used for treatment and the intranasal steroid, which is the preferred one. If I was to pick one of the two that does the better job for all the symptoms, it would be this gentle steroid in the nose, which is very safe compared to more dangerous forms of steroid. And even in young children, it can be used.
And by prescription?
It's by prescription, right, generally speaking, although you can sometimes get, there are some versions of long last, or that have been on the market for a long time, steroids that are available without prescription, certainly in other parts of the world. And then it's when it's more significant than that, we often combine the antihistamine and the steroid into the one nasal spray, with two drugs in the one spray, which does a better job than either a single drug.
Okay. Today, because I would have thought that once it rains, it dampens down the pollen and everything's fine, but that's not the case. And particularly in thundery weather, it sort of, it kicks up the pollen and then it rains down on us. Is that what happens?
Well, yeah, there's often, there have been these instances around the world that get very well publicised in the media called thunderstorm asthma and thunder fever. And this phenomenon is that the climatic conditions of a thunder usually coincide with wind picking up beforehand, and it's happening in a very hot time of year, usually, where the thunderstorms are happening. So that's a perfect storm, to use that pun there, that sucks up pollen into the air. It comes up right up into the clouds. It gets moisture gets into it. It actually swells and bursts and releases the microscopic particles that can then get windswept more widely. And some patients can get quite a bad hay fever and asthma attack, and it can be hospitalised. And there's even been fatalities recorded from this phenomenon, because it often will catch out an unsuspecting patient who mightn't even realise they have asthma, capable of being triggered to this extent.
And it's raining, of course, and they think they're safe.
Well, when the rain comes, it's less of an issue. The issue is actually in the wind. That just before that storm kicks off.
Right. Now, we said you were coming in, Marcus, and we've got loads. We won't get to them all, but I'll try and get it through as many as possible. My son, 5, is nonverbal and delayed, so not easy to know what's going on with him, but he's sneezing like mad around grass, nose and eyes streaming. So I gave him cetrine, is it?
Yeah, cetrine with cetirizine. That's an over-the-counter.
Yeah, every morning. But after a week, it seemed like he had sinus pain and had a big build-up of snot up high. So one night in bed, his nose just ran all night. And Mum said maybe give decongestant too. Do you know about what antihistamines do, and can I tell him to blow his nose? So there's a couple of questions.
Yeah,
there.
So certainly the antihistamine was the right thing to start with. I think this mother is absolutely on the ball. That the symptoms she's describing there, you know, sneezing, itchy eyes, streaming, it would all be classic hay fever symptoms. And the antihistamine, cetirizine, is actually a very good one to use, and it's very good in children of this age. Now, I stress I'm not a paediatric doctor,
yes,
but it's widely known that this is a very good medication to use in this age group.
What about a decongestant?
Decongestants we're not great fans of, because some people use them over and over and over, and when you do that, you can get into if you use them for more than a week, you can start to get into a vicious circle that when you try to come off it, you get a swelling reaction as a result. That's only eased by going back on it again, and we call that condition rhinitis medicamentosa, and it's important to keep away from overuse of decongestants that you get over the counter. We sometimes will recommend them very briefly for a sudden blockage of the nose, but they work best if they're on a background of a nasal steroid that's taken all the time, and stop that decongestant medication after at most about 4 or 5 days.
That's good and important advice, and that was Amy there. Can you ask your expert, that's you Marcus, if severe breathlessness can be part of hay fever? I've had this for months since getting COVID in February 2023. I've had to decline invitations to social occasions, etc. I've no puff, can't sing happy birthday, thanks.
Yeah, so this is not COVID illness, and COVID is the virus we now know can trigger symptoms of rhinitis and trigger asthma. And I'd be quite concerned that this patient who has hay fever and now has breathlessness has probably got allergic asthma and needs to talk to their GP.
Now, I'm looking at the age here.
Yes.
And it's 70.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's a very good point, that a lot of us conjure up the image of asthma as a child, that's wheezing, but asthma can happen at any age in life, right up to your 90s. And it's important that it's always suspected. It's intermittent variable symptoms over time, coming and going, either breathlessness, cough, tightness or wheeze. And those symptoms will most often turn out to be asthma in somebody who doesn't smoke, for example.
And what about hay fever? Can you get late onset hay fever as well?
Absolutely. You can develop allergies at any stage in life, but it's more common to develop in boys than girls. When they're young. Later, after sexual maturity, it's often females have a higher rate of development of allergy. And testosterone perhaps is even a little bit protective. Although there's debate in literature about that. See her GP with a high suspicion for asthma. If they're smoking in the background, COPD would be the other leading condition to look for.
Ask Marcus if taking ginger would help with mucus overload during a hay fever attack.
So I can't recommend the alternative therapies, because we know what does work, and there hasn't been enough reassuring science for me to be able to recommend other approaches.
Okay, that's a good answer. Marianne, can I ask Marcus regarding pollen and the rhinitis that develops in May, June for my son almost every summer? I'm thinking ahead to his state exams next June. I'm wondering what we can do next March or April to reduce the symptoms of the stuffy nose that develops, as well as the itchy eyes and sneezing. Because it does affect people's ability to concentrate, doesn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yes. So a lot of people think of it as minor symptoms, but just as this person, the caller, has mentioned, it can start to interfere with your ability to work or in school. It can interfere with sport and other activities, and get people quite down. So it is important to correctly manage hay fever when it's causing that burden of symptoms. So if antihistamine and nasal steroid spray, or even both combined, are not giving a good enough level of control, they can talk to their GP about potentially being referred to an allergist to consider immunotherapy, which is where you take a little tablet that dissolves in seconds under the tongue for grass pollen. You need to be tested and proven to have grass pollen allergy, and you need to have significant symptoms like this that don't settle with the more regular medications. And then you take it every day for 3 years, and within the first year it should significantly improve the symptoms. And we started about 3 to 4 months before pollen season starts.
So they could be working on that now.
Because if they have
the leave insert or the junior cert next year,
they could get going on that, say in January, February for next year, to be ready in time for the grass pollen season.
Okay.
But they need to talk to their doctor and go through that process.
Right. So that's a desensitization. So you're getting a small bit of grass pollen. And then is the amount increased over time? Is that it?
No, it's a steady dose. We supervise the first dose in the doctor's office. There's a tiny risk of reactions. I mean, the most common reactions are actually relatively minor, just a little bit of itching and localised swelling just under the tongue that patients get very quickly used to. And it's fairly trivial. And they take it themselves then every day after that first dose. It'll only work though if you take it. So the biggest problem in this area is people forgetting to take it.
And you have to take it forever then?
No, we recommend taking it for up to 3 years. But you should stop it if you don't find that first season is greatly better by taking it.
Right. So I'm just curious about this now. So you said there's no cure, but is that a cure?
It's the nearest thing we have probably to a cure. In that it can cause 2 years after you stop it, still noticeable improvements in the rate of hay fever. And there's debate. There is some tantalising evidence that it can alter the development of allergic asthma. But we need a lot more evidence in this.
Research, okay.
And it shouldn't be used in people with significant, severe or uncontrolled asthma. That's really important.
But it's going to be overseen by a medical professional, isn't it? Yeah. Dr. Marcus Ray, a 60-year-old lady, I have very well-controlled asthma, 20 years. I ended up at emergency doc room Saturday night full of wheeze, needed nebulizer, prescribed steroids, antibiotics. I'm on Symbicort and Ventolin inhaler, Dimista nasal spray, Mon Montelukast at night. Is that
Montelukast? That's right, Montelukast, yeah.
Is that night? I have no smell, so are there irritants going up my nose that I'm unaware of and irritating my lungs, then getting infected?
So if there's no sense of smell, the first thing I'd want in the current climate to address is making sure this person's been tested for COVID-19, if they've got suddenly unwell, because that can interfere with sense of smell in the short term. But once that's ruled out, which is hopefully the case, certainly it raises the concern for significant underlying sinus problems, chronic sinusitis, and potentially nasal polyps, which can be a more tricky form of asthma, where we call it eosinophilic asthma, that can have blocked passages that take away the sense of smell and taste, actually, and it can be very debilitating for patients, but it is treatable, and they should consider seeing an ear, nose and throat specialist.
Now, Maura did say at the end of that, P.S. I'd mowed the lawn, picked weeds, blown dust off the driveway, etc.
All of those are potential ways to trigger allergic
asthma
and irritants. Yeah. Now, the thing is, you can't avoid getting allergy from wearing a mask, but certainly the mask will block out, as we know, 95% of the particulates. So it does help lessen the burden, at least.
There's more information from the website, is there?
Yes, asthma.ie. And there's also a WhatsApp line with an asthma specialist nurse who can also advise on hay fever, and a callback service, the advice line, where you can get callback with expert advice from a knowledgeable nurse at asthma.ie.
We'll put that information along with the podcast. Marcus Butler, thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Back to work for you, and we'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.